You're listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast.
Welcome back to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Soker. On this podcast, the focus is on answering listener questions. If you have a question for a future episode, I'll let you know how you can submit that at the end. This is episode 5 of the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. In the previous episode, we talked about what Christians are to do in a global pandemic. And if you haven't heard that episode, I'll link to it in the show notes of this episode. But this was about the spread of the coronavirus, and that was just getting started then, 2 weeks ago, when I recorded that episode. And the virus has just continued to spread, and we have an increased response to it from government officials and the public in general, and of course, healthcare workers as they are on the front lines of what's going on right now with this. And so all of that is increasing. And as of right now, and of course, this situation is continually evolving, but as of right now, I'm recording this Wednesday night, March 25th. This is releasing on the 26th. But as of now, government officials have ordered certain businesses to be closed, instructed citizens to shelter in place in their homes in certain places, and even in some states, told churches not to meet. And so as a result of everything that's going on, many churches, and judging by what I've seen on Facebook, it seems like this is most churches, but at least many churches have suspended their regular assemblies. And in their place, many have arranged to have virtual assemblies. And in many cases, this is not just a video Bible message being broadcast over the internet. It's an attempt to conduct a virtual worship service, complete with Christians observing the Lord's Supper. Now, others have not gone this route, but they've opted to gather in their homes as small groups or even just the members of each household and have their own service, which includes observing the Lord's Supper. And so all of this raises questions, or ought to raise questions, about the assembly and particularly about the Lord's Supper. And after receiving several questions about this in the past week or so, about the Lord's Supper and the assembly, and even tonight, as I was finishing up going through my notes about to record this, received another question from someone about this topic, about this issue. People have questions about this, and brethren are thinking about it and considering it, which is good. But I've decided to go ahead and use this episode to talk about that question. So the question we're going to be considering is this: can Christians observe the Lord's Supper outside of the assembly? Now, before we get into this, I do want to say that if you are used to listening to this podcast, it's possible that the audio may sound different right now. I started to record this and got about 2 minutes into it, and the microphone that I'd normally use started acting up, and I had to scrap that and use just the built-in microphone on the computer to record this. So if it sounds different, that's the reason. Hopefully we'll still be able to get this recorded okay, where it can be useful to those of you who are listening. But the question we're looking at is, can Christians observe the Lord's Supper outside of the assembly? Now, right now, we are facing a situation that none of us have faced before, with a global pandemic. The last time something like this happened was in 1918 with the Spanish flu. So while there have been different diseases and outbreaks and things like that, we have not seen this. And so Christians individually and churches as groups, they're having to react to something that they haven't seen before and they weren't expecting to have to deal with. And so because of that, whatever decisions are being made right now may not be the same decisions that the same people would make 5 years from now, after having the advantage of hindsight and more time to consider the scriptures in light of the present situation. And so because of that, I think it's good for all of us to be patient with one another as we sort through these matters, while at the same time also looking at the scriptures to see what we ought to be doing and not ignoring what the scriptures say and just, well, we've got to act, we've got to do something now. We need to consider the scriptures while we're doing this. So in a situation like the one we're currently facing, with churches suspending their assemblies to help prevent the spread of this virus. Can we meet instead with just our household or with a small group and still observe the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week? And judging from what I've seen on Facebook, and I realize that this may be skewed because I'm judging it based on that, but it seems like the majority of brethren are doing this, that they are meeting in small groups in their homes or meeting just with their family, whether it's watching a live stream or not. They're meeting in their homes and doing this and observing the Lord's Supper. However, I am not convinced that it's right to do this. And I word it that way for a reason. I'll get to that in a minute. But in this episode, we're going to discuss what the New Testament teaches about the Lord's Supper and the assembly and how all of that relates to this question that we're considering. And if you believe that this is something that is acceptable during this present distress, to use the language of 1 Corinthians 7, and I believe that most Christians, at least that I am aware of, do believe this is acceptable, I hope you'll listen to this episode. Because if this is something that is authorized, and I've just missed something, that there's the scripture that authorizes this practice or something that I've missed, I would like to know about it. Because if there's a scriptural argument that could be made that would justify this sort of practice, I'd like to consider it. So if you have an argument from the scriptures that you believe justifies this practice, I hope you'll send that to me so I can consider it. Now, I'll just ask first, though, that you take the time to carefully listen to what I'm going to say here, and then that way you can see if I have missed something. And then if you see something that I've missed and something that I need to consider, I would hope that you would point that out to me. The first part of this episode is based upon an article that I wrote a year ago called Taking the Lord's Supper Out of the Assembly, and I'll link to that article in the show notes. But this was written a year ago, so it was before there was a question about churches canceling assemblies due to a global pandemic. So the second part of this episode, I'm going to address that situation and how principles and instructions apply to what we're facing now. But as we think about the basics about what the scriptures teach about the Lord's Supper, over in Matthew chapter 26, we see that Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper before his crucifixion as a way for his disciples to remember his death. In Matthew chapter 26, verses 26 through 29, it says, while they were eating, Jesus took some bread, and after a blessing, he broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat, this is my body. And when he had taken a cup and given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. But I say to you that I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. So here we have Jesus instituting the Lord's Supper. You have the bread, which represents his body. You have the fruit of the vine, which represents his blood. He instituted this to remember his death. His disciples could remember his death. And over in Acts 20 and verse 7, you have an example of Christians there in the first century gathering together to observe this memorial. Acts 20 and verse 7, they were coming together on the first day of the week. We were gathered together to break bread. They were observing this memorial. They gathered together. They did this on the first day of the week. And again, the bread represents Christ's body. The cup represents his blood. Paul explained that to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 23 through 26, where he basically repeats what Jesus said in instituting the Lord's Supper. He said, I received this from the Lord, and this is what I also have delivered to you. But that chapter in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 also talks about how, brethren, in verse 33, you come together to eat and you wait for one another because you observe the Lord's Supper together. Now, the New Testament shows us, and what the Lord taught and what his disciples taught, or his apostles taught, is that as his disciples, we have to follow the pattern that's been given in the New Testament. 2 Timothy 1:13 says, "Hold fast the pattern of sound words which you have heard from me." Paul told the brethren in Thessalonica in 2 Thessalonians 2:14, "Stand firm and hold to the traditions which you were taught, whether by word of mouth or by letter from us." Everything we do, Colossians 3:17 says, must be done in the name of the Lord, which means we do things by His authority. So if we recognize this, and I hope that all of us do, we need to follow the pattern. We need to act by the Lord's authority and what He authorizes us to do. We need to see how this applies to the observance of the Lord's Supper, including the question that we're considering now about observing the Lord's Supper outside of the assembly. Now, when we think about what the New Testament pattern is regarding the Lord's Supper, you have several things that are involved in this. One, you have the emblems. We read Matthew chapter 26 already. You have the bread and you have the fruit of the vine. That bread would be unleavened bread. We know that from Matthew 26 and verse 17, a few verses before we read. So you have the unleavened bread, you have the fruit of the vine, you have the purpose that we partake of the Lord's Supper in order to remember the Lord's death on the cross. 1 Corinthians 11:26, Paul said, "For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until He comes." We remember the death of Christ. And as we saw in Acts 20 and verse 7, the time of the Lord's Supper, when we observe it, is on the first day of the week. And then what does the Bible teach? What is the New Testament pattern about the frequency with which we observe the Lord's Supper? Well, just as the Jews in the Old Testament were commanded to remember the Sabbath day, that implied they remember every Sabbath day. That's why one who was caught picking up sticks on the Sabbath in Numbers chapter 15, he was punished. He lost his life because of that, because even though he may have observed every other Sabbath, he didn't observe every Sabbath day to keep it holy. The instruction to observe the Lord's Supper is on the first day of the week. This implies that it is done every first day of the week. And what's interesting, if you go in Acts chapter 20, you see that Paul, we read verse 7, that he gathered together with the church in Troas on the first day of the week. But what's interesting is that you have Paul coming to Troas in verse 6 and staying there 7 days, and then verse 7, observing the Lord's Supper. But yet we read in verse 16 that Paul was in a hurry to get to Jerusalem, if possible, on the day of Pentecost. And so Paul was on a hurried trip to Jerusalem, but yet he remained in Troas 7 days and partook of the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. Why did he do that? Well, because it was to be done every first day of the week. And the place for the Lord's Supper is in the assembly of the local church. Every New Testament example of Christians observing the Lord's Supper since the establishment of the church in Acts chapter 2 shows them doing this in the assembly of the local church. To cite the example of Paul in Troas again, it is significant that even though he was traveling with other Christians, as we can read in Acts 20 and verse 4, they did not observe the Lord's Supper together wherever they happened to be on the first day of the week. Instead, they made sure they were in a local church assembly on the first day of the week in order to partake. Now, generally speaking, brethren agree on most of those things that we just talked about. Most brethren that I have encountered agree on the fact that the emblems are the unleavened bread and the fruit of the vine, that the purpose is to remember the death of Christ, the time that is done is on the first day of the week, and the frequency is every first day of the week. But for some reason, many brethren seem to act as though that in certain situations, what the New Testament says about the place for the Lord's Supper is irrelevant. And in that article that I'm linking to in the show notes, I mentioned three examples in that article of brethren taking the Lord's Supper out of the assembly, that some take the emblems of the Lord's Supper out of the assembly to serve to a church member who is sick at home or in a nursing home. Some will take the few Christians needing to partake of the Lord's Supper but were unable to be present earlier on Sunday when the rest of the brethren assembled, and send them out of the assembly into a back room separated from the congregation to have them partake of the Lord's Supper there. There's actually a local church here where I am that does this. It's the first church I've ever heard of that did this. But they send people out of the assembly into a back room to partake of the Lord's Supper if they weren't there in the morning. And then some brethren, when they're traveling, they'll take along the emblems of the Lord's Supper and partake out of the assembly rather than finding a local church like Paul did in Acts 20. Finding a local congregation and meet with them to observe the Lord's Supper in that assembly. But in all of these examples, the problem with these scenarios and other cases like those is that the Lord's Supper is being observed or is not being observed in its authorized place, which is in the assembly of the local church. Now, if we understand those principles and those things that we've talked about already, what about the current crisis? I think a lot of people basically have an understanding about what the New Testament teaches about these things, but when you have a crisis like you have now, you have a lot of brethren doing something different than what they've done before. And so there's questions that come up. Does the fact that this has been deemed an emergency situation, does that permit taking the Lord's Supper out of the assembly? Do virtual assemblies count as assemblies in the New Testament sense? And if the local church cannot or does not meet, can we observe the Lord's Supper in what we might call mini assemblies, or with your household, or with a small group, maybe one or two other families, just depending on the size of the group? Can you observe the Lord's Supper in these smaller assemblies? These are all good questions, and these are questions that we need to think about. And so I want to offer some thoughts on all of these questions that come up. First, about the emergency situation. Does the fact that this has been deemed an emergency situation, does that permit us taking the Lord's Supper out of the assembly? Now, some brethren have talked about this, that because this is an emergency situation, then what we're doing now with virtual meetings and assembling in that way, that that's not ideal, but that's the best we can do right now. And so an emergency situation would authorize a less than ideal practice. And some people cite the language that Paul used over in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 about the present distress, which seems to fit, because if we think about what is going on right now, this would be a present distress. In 1 Corinthians 7:26, I think that is good in view of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is, meaning if he's not married, for him to remain unmarried. Now, whatever the present distress was when Paul wrote to the Corinthians there in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, the question that they had to do with marriage. Marriage is something that was, that is, and always will be a matter of liberty when we think about whether someone is going to marry or not marry. We are free to marry or not marry. Now, we're not free. We don't have liberty to change God's rules concerning marriage. We can't just, marry whoever we want, a man marry another man. We can't put away a spouse for any reason at all. But as far as the decision to marry or not marry, provided that we are unbound and free to marry, we have liberty. We can decide, I'm going to get married or I'm not going to get married. But we're not free to change God's rules concerning marriage. And so if brethren want to cite this present distress in 1 Corinthians 7 and somehow apply it to this, wouldn't the parallel then be to say that we not observe the Lord's Supper since we can't assemble, rather than change the Lord's Supper by moving it out of the assembly? Because that's what was going on in 1 Corinthians 7. In light of the present distress, you don't do something. It doesn't say you change something. But now, brethren, because of the present distress, are changing something. A present distress, however we want to define that, whether we want to define a global pandemic as a present distress, which I certainly think you can do that, but whatever the situation is, a present distress does not authorize something that was previously unauthorized. That's an important point that we need to remember. A present distress does not authorize something that was previously unauthorized. 1 Corinthians 7 is about remaining unmarried due to the present distress. Remaining unmarried was authorized before, during, and after that period. When we think about the place for the Lord's Supper, that doesn't change, even though you may have a present distress. And that gets into the question about the virtual assemblies. Are those the same thing as the assembly of the church that we are used to or that we are accustomed to? The virtual assemblies are not assemblies like we read of in the New Testament. You always have brethren coming together in one place. There are several examples of this in the book of Acts. I wrote another article on this called The Church Gathered Together. I'll link to that also in the show notes. But you have, in the time that we live in, we have technology that has provided us with an incredible blessing of being able to communicate with others in other places, that we can use this to teach others, to study with others, to encourage one another. But that doesn't make these online meetings the equivalent of a local church assembly as is described in the New Testament. And I'm afraid, brethren, in just going along with this and acting as though this is the same thing, they're starting down a slippery slope, because if these virtual assemblies can be put in place of a face-to-face assembly, now I know no brethren are saying that, well, this is preferable, at least not right now, they're not saying that. But if these virtual assemblies can, for whatever reason, be put in place of the face-to-face assemblies, and we still observe the Lord's Supper, we still do all of that kind of stuff, can we just eliminate local churches and just be part of some big online church? We could just start the Facebook Church of Christ and we just all get together, we all meet online or something of that nature. Now that might seem ridiculous, but if we can't do that, why can't we do that? We need to think through these things. If that is a ridiculous notion that we just eliminate local churches, we don't have to assemble with local churches, we don't have any obligation to do that, we could just be part of an online church. If that's out of place, if that's wrong, if that's unauthorized, why is it wrong? Why should we not do that? I know we can go too far with the slippery slope arguments, but we do need to consider where things head. Because if we're making certain arguments that to justify some certain practice, we need to be careful what else is justified by those arguments. But then the last thing about the question about observing the Lord's Supper with members of one's household or with a small group rather than the local church, a lot of people are citing Matthew chapter 18 and verse 20. I had several people, you know, when this question came up, and even when we were discussing what we were going to do as a local church, this passage was brought up and a question was asked about it. Matthew chapter 18 and verse 20 says, "For where two or three have gathered together in my name, there I am there in their midst." And for a lot of brethren, that is the authority for, well, we can come together, we can just meet, just me, my wife, and if I have kids who are Christians, or us and another family come together, and well, we have two or three, we have a small group, and so God is in our midst, so we can worship, we can observe the Lord's Supper, we can do all of that. The problem is the context. That passage in Matthew chapter 18 and verse 20 is not talking about worship, it's not talking about the Lord's Supper, it's about confirming testimony, that you have truth that is established by the agreement of two or more parties, and there God is in their midst. It's about confirming testimony. The Lord's Supper is observed when the church comes together. The New Testament shows that, and in every passage it talks about it, it's always the local church. Again, remember the example that we mentioned with Paul in Troas. He was traveling to Jerusalem. He was in a hurry to get there. He was traveling with other Christians, and yet he didn't observe the Lord's Supper along the way. He and those who were with him, they stopped in Troas, and they waited 7 whole days and met with the church on the first day of the week to observe the Lord's Supper. So we have, these questions that come up about, what about this, and different arguments that are made. We need to be very careful about misapplying Scripture in order to justify what we're doing, even if this is something that is authorized. Again, if I've missed something, I'm open to hearing that. But let's say that so far I've missed something, that there is a passage that authorizes this or something in the Bible that authorizes this. We need to be very careful about misusing passages like Matthew 18:20 that doesn't talk about worship or the Lord's Supper, or 1 Corinthians chapter 7 that talks about something that is authorized before, during, or after the present distress of one remaining unmarried. We need to be careful about using those passages to justify some practice, because the next generation, if we're making bad arguments, they're going to learn them, and they're going to use those to justify something that we don't even, we wouldn't even imagine. So what about, before we end this, what about canceling worship services? So far throughout this, and this has been a longer episode because there's really a lot to cover, and I thought it was important to get all of it in a single episode. But so far, what we've talked about is whether there's authority for Christians to observe the Lord's Supper outside of the assembly. But the reason why this question has come up is because churches are canceling their regular assemblies on account of this pandemic. Now, there have always been brethren who missed the Lord's Day assemblies due to sickness or travel or parents staying home to take care of a sick child or something like that. And yet, we have never, at least to my knowledge, asked whether these individuals could observe the Lord's Supper in a virtual worship service. Maybe some people have done that or some people have asked that, but it hasn't really been something that was practiced or widespread. But with this question now, with the situation, now it is widespread, and now people are asking these questions because churches now are canceling worship services. Now, the New Testament never mentions churches canceling services. It only talks about churches meeting. So there are no guidelines presented in the New Testament that outline when a congregation should cancel their services. And so there are other things that we need to keep in mind. If a church is going to do this, it's going to be based upon two things: ability and opportunity. Ability, are we able to get out and assemble? If someone's sick, they're not able to get out, so they stay home. If there's a pandemic and everyone's sick, well, then everyone's going to stay home. Everyone's not going to be there. Or in the case of winter weather and people just cannot get to the place of meeting, well, the church is not able to meet. There's the lack of ability. And then you have opportunities. Has the church decided to assemble? Now, many churches have several meeting times throughout the week, which are all good and all helpful and all of them important. But the New Testament talks about one assembly that is mandated by God, which is the assembly for worship on the first day of the week, so there's an opportunity to partake of the Lord's Supper. Other assemblies, whatever those might be, Sunday Bible class, Wednesday evening Bible study, whatever they are, gospel meetings, those are all determined by the agreement of members of the local church. And so those opportunities may or may not be there because it's based on the decision of the members of that church whether they're going to have these assemblies or not. And the same is true for the time and place of the assembly on the first day of the week. There may be times where you don't meet at the church building. If you're part of a congregation that has its own building, there may be times you don't meet at the building, but you assemble, you have an assembly some other place. But you have these opportunities to assemble. Well, what if we don't have the ability or the opportunity to assemble on the first day of the week? Can we partake of the Lord's Supper outside of the assembly? Well, many people, many Christians are saying yes to this. And as I said at the beginning, I'm not convinced that this is right. because I don't see where this is authorized in the New Testament. This seems to me to be more like a situation where someone misses the assembly because of illness. No one would say that that person sins because he didn't observe the Lord's Supper in the assembly, which they shouldn't because the scriptures don't indicate that someone sins in that situation. But if this person misses the first day of the week assembly and therefore does not partake of the Lord's Supper, he simply waits to partake the next time he is able to be in the assembly on the first day of the week. And so this situation where you don't have one or two people out, but you have more people out, or even everyone who may be out, this seems to be more of that situation where people are missing because of illness. But for those who believe that there is authority for this, I'd like to consider the biblical arguments for it. If this is authorized, I would like to be able to practice it with a good conscience. Because right now, I can't do that in good conscience. I can't meet in my home with my family or with a handful of other Christians that are not, it's not the assembly of the local church. It'd be different if the church was assembling in my home, but just a separate group from the local church, meet together there on a first day of the week and observe the Lord's Supper. I can't do that in good conscience because I'm not convinced it's right. So if there is a argument, if you have an argument that would show me that this would be something that is right, this is something that I could do in good conscience, well, I'd like to consider that. So I would ask you, now that we're at the end of the episode and you've listened to what I've had to say on this, if I've missed something, I would love for you to send that in and point that out to me. But as we close this episode, and again, this has been a little bit longer, longer than I normally do these, but again, I wanted to cover everything in a single episode because it's really all goes together. You can't break this up. This current crisis is difficult for all of us for a lot of reasons. You have Christians and you have churches that are trying to do the best that they can to deal with everything about this crisis, and they're not having a lot of time to figure things out or to deliberate. And my hope is that if you haven't given this question a lot of thought, that you've considered what I've said here, that you'll continue to think about this and study the scriptures and consider this question. If you have given thought to it and I've missed something, let me know. But let me close with this reminder. Our primary motivation in everything that we do needs to be love for the Lord. Matthew chapter 22, verse 37, after Jesus was asked what the great commandment is in the law, Jesus said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment." This is above everything. Love the Lord with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. How do we demonstrate our love for God? We do that by keeping His commandments. Jesus said in John 14 and verse 15, "If you love me, you'll keep my commandments." And so while we're facing difficult times here, I want to encourage all of us, let's make sure that we show our love for the Lord, that we keep that as the primary motivation in everything that we do. And we make sure we're following God's commands in everything that He's instructed us to do. Well, thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. If you found this episode to be helpful, please pass this along and share it with others. If you have a question for a future episode, there are several ways that you can submit it. You can fill out our podcast question submission form, and there's a link to that in the show notes of this episode. You can send a message to the Plain Bible Teaching Facebook page. You can tweet your question, if you use Twitter, to Plain Bible Teaching. It'll be at Plain Bible Teach on Twitter. And the past couple episodes, I've dealt with pressing matters relating to current events because we are in an unprecedented time period with this pandemic that's going on right now. I don't know if this is going to continue as far as the content of the episodes. That's just going to depend on what questions may arise, what questions may be directed to me. Again, I wasn't necessarily planning to do this episode or this topic on this episode, but since I got several questions about it, I went ahead and pushed everything else back and did this episode. That may happen with the in the future with the next episodes. I can't really predict that right now. And so we'll kind of play it by ear. But eventually, whether it's the next episode or somewhere down the line, we will get back to the previously planned and requested topics. We'll be talking about things like the Holy Spirit, modern day Israel, Satan, and other things that have been asked about. And so eventually we will get to all of those questions. But I appreciate you listening today. I hope that this has been helpful. Again, if you have any questions or, again, something that I've missed, I invite you to send that in, and I'd love to study that more or consider that more. But thank you for listening today, and I'll talk to you again soon.